Hey everybody, Stu Smith here with Jeff Nichols, and we're doing another Tactical Fitness Report. This time, we're talking about change, and one change that you can always depend on is the change of seasons and how that affects our training, it affects our recovery, it affects our preparation to train, and so many other things. So, Jeff, welcome back.
It's good to be back.
Thanks for being on. I know we've both been busy, so... it's always good. And this is a good time of year as we just went through the vernal equinox. No, that's summer
or spring. August 21st. August 21st.
September. September. So we just went through the fall equinox where it was exactly 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of darkness in a 24-hour period. And now it's just getting nothing but shorter days until the solstice, I guess, right?
Yeah. Unless you're listening to us near the southern hemisphere.
Yeah.
Then you're going into spring.
You're going the other direction. So regardless, we all have to deal with these changes. So if we're in a, we'll just talk northern hemisphere first. I know we are planning on doing more outdoor training because last year we lost our gym. Couldn't put this many people into a facility that was kind of small. So we just did our training outside, did all our lift cycles outside. And we just loved it. It was a lot of fun. You know, we had to dress properly, had to brought some heaters, and we had to run a little bit more just to stay warm in between sets, but it wasn't crazy running. It was just, you know, just kind of warm, get the body heat going. But no, I mean, we had a lot of fun. And that's our plan this year. We're going to start the fall winter lift cycle coming up here in a few more weeks, and we're making those preparations accordingly. So I know we wanted to chat a little bit about change. How do you want to bring this one?
Yeah. We'll touch on like how we, this kind of started, like we forgot about the topic initially. It was just like, say, Hey, what, you know, 'cause you and I always say like, get a good solid plan together. And that solid plan includes set a timeline for your training based on your goals and your state of readiness, like where you're at, where are you starting training? That determines typically the length of time. And so a lot of times we say train for a year, year and a half, and that takes us through the seasons. Okay. And like this kind of, my thought was like, you know, guys are going off to boot camp. Like I went October 1st. That's the one I joined the Navy, October 1st, 2001. That's the day. Right. So I know, boom. So there's a seasonal change. And, you know, temperature, and, you know, I go there and I get sick and all these sort of things. And I was saying, like, one of the best things for the immune system to do is in that year, if you have a really solid training system that's cyclic, that's, you know, it's just whatever it is, whatever you're training for, in this case, special forces, whatever. But if you have that year in which you're training, you're experiencing all those changes in climate and shifts in darkness and cold, and you've allowed your body to acclimate through those natural changes that we don't have control over, right? That will further enhance our immune system. Yeah. It'll further enhance our ability to adapt to these changes when they happen, because especially in buds, I know, especially on a coast, I mean, it happens all the place, but on coastal cities, you get a lot of pressure shifts. Mm-hmm. Not too bad in San Diego, way more out here east. But those pressure shifts can really, fuel inflammation to your joints and things like that. So what's my point? My point is if you go through the whole year, regardless where you're at, if you're in Michigan or South Florida, whatever it is, there's enough shifts in those seasons to challenge the nervous system. And then through that challenging the nervous system, it should help teach you, okay, I'm getting sore. I recognize I'm getting sore. Start asking questions like, okay, well, sun's getting up, it's darker, all these sort of things. It's just a nice thing, because when you go to ranger school or wherever you end up going, you don't have control of when you start. So you might be a winter hell week, you might be a summer hell week, you might, or whatever it is, but if you've experienced the full seasons and all of its changes, it's one of those things that, you know, you acquire that adaptation without really purposely doing it. But from a health standpoint, from a fighting off an illness standpoint, that for me, especially going into boot camp where you're all just coming from all over the country and everyone's bringing all their own little, their bugs in and whatnot. And it's like, That's the big thing, is if you can go through boot camp without getting too terribly sick.
Oh, that's the goal.
Now we know that transition into preparation is going to be much, much easier.
Yeah, man. Long before COVID, I used to say, wash your hands every day. Don't even touch your face.
Oh, and man. Don't bite your nails.
Yeah. Number one goal at boot camp is don't get sick.
Yep. Right? This is going to sound like that's the best advice I can offer anyone, is at boot camp or at OCS or at ROTC or whatever, when you are getting together to get to where you want, don't put your hands in your mouth. Yeah. Stop this. No habit of touching your face. Don't bite your nails because you're nervous. Like all that stuff, man.
Yeah.
It's a big one.
Cause you're picking up germs all the time. So,
you betcha.
All right. So, hey, funny thing, October 1st, 30 years ago, I was in first phase, first week of Buds.
Yeah, there you go.
Cause we had like a Halloween hell week somewhere around there. So,
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Close to Halloween hell week. Yeah.
My very first deployment was October 1st, 2002.
Yeah, it's so new fiscal year. Everybody's
That's why, like, I ended up getting through, I guess, my deployment so quickly, just because it happened when I came out of the Navy on the fiscal year. It just kind of set me up for like these really quick. And we have a couple guys now that are going into boot camp October 4th from our last class too. So they're kind of, I'm kind of curious if they experience the same sort of seasons and stuff. And Because me being in October and then going to A school and getting to Buds, my pipeline was just super fast. I didn't have any days off, which is great. There's no holiday breaks, is my point.
Right.
We had Fourth of July was a 4-day weekend, and that was my only like stop in training, which I was super thankful for.
It's a good game. Because
I would not like be there for Christmas and go, oh, got to go home for 2 weeks and then I start it back up. Yeah. That would have been hard.
Yeah. All right. So we're talking about changes. So here's what we do. We look at the year basically as a bell curve of training intensity. And this has saved me for over 20 years of personally training like this, but also, coaching people. And for me, it has been when I say bell curve, it's just been, we kind of start off kind of easy in the winter with running and calisthenics reps. And we ramp it up to more running and calisthenics reps in the summer, longer days, longer runs, faster runs, and then we ramp it back down. Now, there's an inverse bell curve that comes in here like this, where we're focusing on other events. We're focusing on lifting and load bearing, whenever the reps are low down here in the winter. So our winter is more of a load bearing, lifting cycle, though there is some still running in there. It's just different running. It's a lot less miles, more faster pace, not sprinting necessarily, but more goal pace type running. So you can still maintain your mile and a half. You can still get good at 4 mile timed runs. If you need to, if you need to really focus on your weakness, which might be a strength weakness or it might be an endurance weakness, we can make adjustments to that individual because, just like dieting, there's no one size fits all for anybody in this journey. And I think where it's most important is we just have to be honest with ourselves and realize there's a certain set of strengths, certain set of weaknesses that I have, that you have, and it usually corresponds with how hard you're training, your athletic history, other injuries. And this is a really good time whenever it's a seasonal change. It's a really good time to address some of those weaknesses and say, all right, this next cycle, I'm going to work on these weaknesses and work okay to try to maintain my strengths. You don't have to be world class in anything in your strengths. In fact, I tell people all the time,
it's a detriment.
Yeah. There's usually an equal and opposite reaction to your ability to be number one in something. You're probably last in something else.
You bet. Yep. Yeah. That was me. Like I was like way up front in the swimming. I was more content on being in the back of the run, but I never ran slower than 29 minutes.
Yeah.
So, but I knew that, like, I'll be honest with you. Like, here's the reality. I would never say this with Bud's instructor when I was there, but that was part of my plan. The very first day I showed up to Bud's, I was like, I'm going to run the first run at the pace I need to do it in third phase. And then never run any faster. And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah. That's healthy. I try to get,
I knew that was my weakness too.
Yep.
But I knew 29 minutes was still plenty fast. I mean, reality for someone that's 190 pounds, and soft sand, that's a decent pace for me. That's an acceptable pace.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm good with that. So,
and you do wind up getting faster, you know?
That's the beauty. Granted, my 4 mile time runs wasn't something like, there was effort there. I wasn't like,
oh yeah,
you can't drag ass at 29 minutes, 190 pounds. But
no,
my point is like, I was kind of like, it was a chess match. I was like, okay, what's the evolution the next day? It's like, or that after the run, what do I got to do? Is it the O course? Is it dive physics? Like, what are we doing here? You know? So that went into play too. And that's exactly why the Buzz instructors don't tell you what you're doing days in advance. They'll tell the OIC and probably the LPO really, or whatever, the night what you're doing the next day. Sometimes do you know when you were there, did they give you the schedule for the week?
Yeah, we had the schedule for the week. So we knew when we'd pass it on, say 4 mile time run on Thursday this week, you know, two mile swim on Wednesday, you know, whatever. And it bounced around and you know, if you could get a 4 mile time run on a Monday, that was the best. You know,
ours always were like almost always legs weren't until beat. We got to second phase.
Yeah. Some days are 4 mile time runs on a Friday and those sucked.
Or Wednesday at 2 o'clock at high tide.
Yeah, oh yeah.
When they know it's like you're running on the berm and it's like, how am I going to pass this? And no one does.
Yeah. Once again, we're talking about all the different types of situations that make changes to your normal training, right? You have to be adaptable to this. And I think that's where Jeff was really hitting it on at the beginning when we were just talking about your ability to go through a timeline where you have these changes in your training, dealing with the cold, dealing with the heat, dealing with hydration, electrolytes, you know, especially in hot and humid environments, or arid environments, you have to deal with that as well. And you know, fueling requirements that you need for different temperatures.
Yeah. Cause if you've gone through the whole year of training, like Stu's latest training out, he's got a form, he's got a plan, you guys follow through it. When you followed through that, I really do mean this. I mean this literally. Anyone that follows it, we'll use Stu's as a perfect example and his guys. When they've trained through his pipeline for at least a year, we'll say there should be a certainty for that candidate that whatever comes their way from a standpoint of environment, or, you know, oh, I've had shin splints and got through them. Oh, I had some knee pain and got through it. Man, my shoulders were bummy, but I was able to work through it because I did it smartly, right? In a process. It is that process that for me, I believe that gives you that emotional stability when you get there. Like, man, I've been through this. Like, I've been harder stuff. Like, I've been colder. I've ran when it was colder. I've done these things. Maybe not truly under the context of Buzz, because that has its own sort of added fright to it, we'll call you. But it is something, especially after a year, you should be able to go to Buzz and go, well, there's really nothing that they can throw at me that I can't do physically, unless they set the parameters up where you're going to fail anyway. And that's okay. But that's part of the game.
Yeah.
But I do believe it's like, you know, the biggest struggle is like the guys that are physically can physically handle it, but that doesn't at all necessarily say that they can emotionally handle it. But if someone is willing to go through a year of training where they have to have focus, they have to have some intent, they have to show up every day, they have to, all those things that we say are intangibles. Yeah. You acquire those intangibles and you reinforce those tangibles through a year of training.
Yeah.
Right. And that's oftentimes too, is because, like, now we look at sport. That's why you see a lot of college athletes that acclimate to the training so fast, because they got out of college and they've been playing year round. They've been in a training cycle of some sort year round. So it's not that unfamiliar to them to get into it. So when Stu and I say to a former college athlete, hey man, it's going to take you maybe, you know, 8 months to a year, depending on where you came in, to them, it's not like, oh my God, 8 months. It's like, oh, okay, I understand that structure. And that's what we want you guys to do, is like, it's Buds and Ranger School and all these things aren't just about like, can you get physically prepared and are you emotionally ready? Really, it comes down to me is like, you're not physically prepared and you probably can't be emotionally ready unless I've, you know, we know you've gone through that year of training. There's no guarantee, but anyone that's really willing to put their ass out there for a year to 18 months in preparation for something, there is a, there's much more of a likelihood that there's going to be success. I would say that pretty confidently.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'll be honest with you too. There aren't many, if any, gym workouts, let's say 30, 45 minute lift workouts that are going to prepare you for a day of spec ops training.
Agreed.
There's not a 50 mile a week run cycle that's going to fully prepare you well for a, you know, week or day of spec ops training. You know, they all have to be involved in a way and balanced in a way.
Yeah.
So you are maximizing your strengths, but you've also turned your weaknesses into more of a strength.
Yeah.
That's less of a gut check.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, that does take time and being honest with yourself of understanding this is my weakness. I got to fix it. You know, if it's a swimming technique, it's a, let's say you're a great runner, got good upper body strength. You've been lifting for a year, but your swimming still stinks. And then you go swimming and you say, dang, man, I can't even get across a pool without being winded. It's a whole different type of conditioning.
Yeah.
Your running ability at a 5 minute mile does not translate into swimming ability. Yeah. I've seen five, six minute milers come into the pool and just get crushed. Then they get their technique better. And then they realize, okay, I was wasting way too much energy in this. So there's a lot of that where you can, you know, take this time, learn the technique, get in condition for that element, but also eventually that technique is going to kind of override your conditioning needs. You know, because I see 80-year-old women lapping my guys, you know, in the pool, you know, they're just cruising. Yeah, they just
super efficient.
Super efficiency. And, you know, they're basically walking in the park. You know, their heart rate is probably that of a walker that they've gotten so good at their technique. And that's kind of the goal of spending some time. And that doesn't always apply. Not only applies to swimming, it applies to everything else. Your efficiency and movement and everything is learned best over time. Like you can't just build up to, let's say, 40 miles a week of running, you know, and then go, right?
Yep.
You need to have a stable, you know, conditioning level at a certain, let's say 20 miles a week for a couple of months. And then, you know, maybe if you want to up it a little bit more, that's fine. But here's the problem with keep on upping it more. And I get this all the time with 50 mile a week guys is, you know, how many of those miles are 9 minute mile pace
are over the pace necessary for the course. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you're just getting good. I mean, I understand building a aerobic base. I get that, you know, but you know, you already have an aerobic base. Why add 20 miles to your week of 10 minute miles, you know, unless you're putting on a ruck, you know,
and the surest way to run slow is to train running slow.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the guarantee. It's like, what does a door stop do? It stops a door. Okay. What does running long, slow distances do? It teaches you to run long, slow distances. And that's the thing is that people like, that's where I'm so baffled by these things. And in as much of organizations just given arbitrary stuff, like, yeah, run 40 miles a week arbitrarily. Like that has never worked.
Yeah.
It's never worked in sport. It will never work in sport. And there's no sport in the world that is more difficult in its selection than military training, specifically spec ops. So if every major university and professional team in the world, right, trains basically within a conjugate, right? They don't do linear, long linear training. Like this, I can say this very confidently that any franchise, athletic franchise that's amateur or professional in the world, right, they don't do more of something to achieve a goal. They work, and that's what we're saying is like that's why it's so important that you hear what Stu is saying. Your training has to be cyclic. Why also? It's like, because you only have three energy systems, only three. That's it, right? And you're only developing on those three energy systems. And each one of those energy systems has its limitation of stress. Like they can only be stressed out so long before they inhibit the other energy systems. And that's what we're doing. It's like Stu and I as coaches, we recognize that there's this trend of when you do something linear, like maybe you run long, run for 6-8 weeks, that's linear. Like what I mean by linear is this, let me define this better. Linear means you're either gonna, each day you go into the gym or the track or the pool, you do something either longer or harder. You think that every single time I'm gonna do it longer and harder, longer and harder, longer and harder, just keep acquiring more and more and more. That's linear.
A nice steady percentage rate, progression.
Yeah,
boom, boom, boom.
That works for a very short period of time only, and depending on energy systems. Sometimes it works for 6 weeks, sometimes it only works for two. Yep. The point is they don't last for 8, 10, 12, 15, 20 weeks consecutively, which is why we're saying if you want to develop yourself holistically as a whole soldier, warrior, whatever, Marine, SEAL, whatever, it's no different than when you get to the teams. It's like we don't just do skydiving indefinitely.
Yeah, you
do some diving, you do skydiving, you do CQB, you do all these sort of things. You basically collect, what you're doing is you're collecting these abilities. And that's what training over a good period of time is, you collect all these physical and emotional abilities that you wouldn't otherwise have if you didn't do it. And you would never acquire it if you didn't do that. That's the trick, is like, well, I want to acquire these talents, these skills. Well, the only way you, as long as you're a human being, can acquire those is a program and a process over a time based on your needs. And that, and let's say it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, so you're saying you need to clearly define everyone's needs. No. Because each human only has three energy systems. Yeah. You might find people that need to develop their energy systems differently. Right. Well, then you say, why? Well, then why don't you train them? Why is Stu doing it? And you guys do it cyclically. Well, because that's the stress. It's like, let's say this runner needs to improve on his strength, but the group isn't on it yet. Well, he can still run. It's just not his time to challenge. Because you got to figure, when Stu and I change our cycles, some people it's more challenging for, some people it's less challenging for. And that's why we say go all year round, because, you know, this 3-month winter cycle is really going to be good, easier for your guys that have some experience in the weight room.
Sure.
And load bearing, right? Whereas the guys that are coming to see you right now that just got done with cross country and they've never had a load bearing, well, it changes the things a little bit. And it doesn't say that the guys that have weightlifting experience, it doesn't benefit them. No. It's like, it's gross motor movement versus fine motor movement. And that's why over the course of the year, it's like, if I'm adept at weightlifting, well, my weightlifting, and this is where Stu comes in, he's like, hey, you guys are good at this. So we're going to change the parameters of your rep scheme. Do them better. Do them a higher velocity. You change them up individually as you know them, right?
Yep.
And that's what you, people that are listening to us that's never trained with either of us, what there's so much about what we do they don't see, about how much experience you have, and you can identify right away. And you can say, do this, do this, do this. And you're like, well, wait a minute, those guys aren't doing it. It's like, yes, but we're in the training pipeline now, and now we can make these tweaks.
Right.
Because we need, Stu needs to challenge his guys to see what they need to do. And you got to uncover that in these phases. And then as the phases change, you go, okay, remember, we were waiting for this phase because we're in a run phase, and now you need to focus on this. And that all comes out in the wash after time.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Now you have people with different training abilities still training at a high level because now they understand the process.
Yeah.
And that's what people get in a good process, is they get an understanding of the process too.
Yeah. And assessing yourself is key. I mean, you have to assess. I mean, you don't have to do it every week, but you definitely need to know, wow, you know, I could be a little stronger, right? Or I need to run a little faster, right? I need to swim a little better. You know, right? These are just some of the easy things that, you know, part of your training should require an assessment of your strengths and weaknesses, and then you know how to tailor whatever program you're on to address some of those. For instance, football player comes in, weighs 270. You know, his goal is to lose almost 70 pounds because he's 6'1" and 270, overweight, strong, strong as an ox. But he you know, he has a hard time swimming. I have a hard time running. You know, I'm going to pull him out of the weight room, might do some warm-up sets with him in the weight room, but then the rest is going to be some, you know, non-impact cardio, yep. right? Just to get him to basically run his ass off or
bike truly,
his ass off, right?
You bet. Yeah.
You know, but the flip side for the other guy, right? If we have a cross-country kid coming in our run cycle, you know, in the summer, he's going to kick our butts every day.
Yeah. But he's going to have a rude awakening when it's time to lift some weights, though, too, in a sense, unless he humbled himself to it.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, they have a rude awakening when it comes to a pull-up bar at first.
Yeah, you bet.
Then they're able to use some of that endurance muscle stamina that they have to build really quickly in the calisthenics world. But don't let that fool you, because you can now run and do high-rep calisthenics in a relatively short time. There's still a missing mark that you put under a load. You're going to start seeing other weaknesses show up real quick, whether that's a bench press or a squat or a deadlift or a backpack or a sandbag. You know, all of those will start is a valuable tool to assess, you know, are you having strength and power weaknesses?
Yep.
All right. So, and that's all this is. You know, every time we make a change, we do an assessment. And let's figure out what we need to work on in this next season of change.
Yep. The biggest issue is, like, people, we're all guilty of this to some degree, and it's hard to kind of get out of this mode when you're in selection or prepping for it, is that there is this psychological thought that, like, if I continue to train my strengths, that'll mask my weaknesses. And that's also the reason why you're getting a cyclic training, because you need to get out of that mentality of, well, what's the, if you're training to make yourself the best capable, but you're negating your weaknesses that you're aware of, what's the, you know, like, we're really missing the whole point there. Right. And I think that that's the thing too, is, like, training year round allows us, because some people may actually be quite athletic and that, but in an athletic realm, right. They were very, you know, when you're playing between lines and you have foul poles, right. Like, you're, it's pretty linear. Like, I mean, you're running around. It's very, 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 there's a lot of agility there, but the dynamic agility with that much duress is very unique to what we're talking about. And that's where we say, like, hey, you know, guys do have it. Some guys may have a physical advantage coming in, like wrestlers, we will say, like, we're kind of like, they typically endure it pretty well. But we go, well, why is that? You know, if you look at how wrestlers train, it just makes sense in a sense, right? It's such a constant give and take of force that's dynamic, that's stagnant, that's isometric.
It's mental.
And it's
mentally so tough.
You get that. So I think that's the other side too. Yeah, is trying, because we talk mental toughness, we talk grit, we talk all these buzzwords. Well, how do you really, really, truly empirically achieve what I think what most people are saying, I want to be mentally tough for that. Well, that mental toughness is forged through the physical acquisition of being there every day, doing it, following a plan, experiencing a deficit and working through it. Like, there's nothing more forging of character and mental toughness than having something that is either a limitation, right? It's a weakness or an injury that you're able to successfully work through.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I tell people all the time, you build mental toughness by showing up day after day after day, doing the work, even when you don't feel like it. Yep. That's a big one. You know, jumping into a pool at 5:45 in the morning is not a fun thing to do. Right. I mean, it's kind of cold outside and you're like, oof. You know, you got to make that step. You know, that's something that every little thing like that, when you work out, even when you don't feel like it, you know, and you're not sick or ill, that's a big plus in the mental toughness and confidence
you know,
part of your brain. Where people screw up is they think they need to do some gut check event, you know, and run 100 miles in a weekend, and then next thing you know, you don't run for 3 months because you got stress fractures in your feet. That's where mental toughness goes to the stupid side, right? There's a fine line between mental toughness and stupid, and you know, trying not to cross that and injure yourself is the key.
Yep. Here's the reality too, is like, I'll say this now, it only works in some regard, I guess. And it's kind of an amoebus thing, but I'll use myself as an example, just to paint a picture of what I'm talking about. Just, you can use a bunch of things, but like, but prior to the Navy, when I made a decision to do it, like, I grew up in Iowa in a band, my parents' house basement. It's cold. It's really fucking cold in Iowa, right? In the winter. And I remember when I made my decision, you know, year and a half out. So again, I had to go through the seasons, train through the seasons. And I was visiting my family in Iowa, and it's still to this day, I get up in the middle of the night between 2 and 3 a.m. to go to the bathroom. So what I got in the habit of doing for me, because I knew that this is good enough for me, and it's good enough for anyone if you're actually willing to make the choice. Like Stu saying, it's cold, get in the water. You know, I didn't take cold showers, but when I, in the basement where my room is at, it'd be cold in the winter, I get out of bed. You know, the last thing I want to do is like get out of that warm bed.
Yeah.
I get out of bed.
That's a big moment.
Yeah.
That's a big moment.
Put myself emotional, like really deep visualization where I get a physical response. Like I'm standing there and going, there will be a time in the very near future when this is going to happen. And you're going to be asked to get in cold water. You're going to ask to go for a run. You're going to like, think of how you feel, how tired you are, how cold you are. It's like, you're going to be asked to be in this state and go do things you would just, they're unthinkable. Go run 4 miles, go swim 2 miles, go just be in this water until you go hypothermic. I did that every day. I didn't jump in a cold shower, but I just thought, hey, this is something I'm gonna have to do. Am I willing to do this? Like, if I had to do it right now, could I see myself following through with it? You bet. And I just every chance I woke up that I was tired. Every time I was a groundskeeper at a hospital, I'd be like, fuck, I'm so tired. It's like, okay, well, this is a state I'm gonna be in at some point in my future. Is this something I'm really willing to go through? Yes. And every time it was yes. And it wasn't that I went and go did it, but when it was time to go do it, it's like what Stu was saying. It's like, you can just see the guys. I bet you $1 million. When you get in the pool, like everyone gets to change. And you have some guys that are just left looking around going, I'm going to get in the last possible second.
Yeah.
That doesn't make someone any good or bad, but it just makes you, you can see the little thought bubbles go, oh, fuck.
You know how I do it? And I make the clock my instructor, so to speak. So when that clock second hand hits the top, that's when
you
I go.
Choice.
You've lost your choice. I've created this habit now of like, I'm in the water when that second hand reaches the top. I'm no longer sitting there for over a minute thinking about the swim. It's like, all right, well, I show up at like, you know, whatever, 6:50 with 50 seconds. I got 10 seconds to be in the water. I got to hurry.
Yeah.
So it is just, it's a way you can play with.
But you're right, the little thing. That's the thing, is because you can't emotionally put yourself in the state of buds until you're there.
Yeah.
Like you hear all of us talk about stories. Everyone's seen the videos and the pictures like, oh, I can get ready for it. Nope. All right, that's why it's like, you know, you hear guys taking cold showers and sleeping on the beach and these things. Like, and they're the first ones to quit. Because you're like, that's not something you need to prepare for physically necessarily, you know, like, and it just shows someone. I always say that sort of motivation, I call it motivation. Yeah. That motivation is so fragile and frail. It's so fragile and frail, you know, and I always say that motivation really, like at that level, like the really loud, flamboyant guys, the guys that are taking cold showers and they're very braggatory about it. Like for me, that is. That motivation is where people go to hide. They go to that point of motivation to try to mask their inability, to overshadow their lack of preparation. That's all it is. It's that nonsense is just total lack of preparation.
Yeah, you will see that. Mm-hmm. That is for sure.
Oh, man. So no, I think that's the whole point of the season, because like, here's the deal. Like if you can be in any state where it gets pretty cold, Maryland gets plenty cold. Here gets plenty cold. Go to Iowa, Minnesota, places like that where
brutal.
You're getting out of the pool and you go to your car. You have to have a beanie on because your hair will totally freeze. You have to make sure your ears are dried out in Minnesota and Iowa because they will freeze in your ear. And then if you have ice form inside your ear, that's bad, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So there is a different animal, and you step out, and it's Maryland, and it's snowing, and you're like, holy crap, it's that wet, terrible snow that we get here. And then you're like, and the pool deck is cold, there's a draft, somebody opened the door, and there's a draft coming in, and you're just like, oh my God, this is terrible. Yep, and that's exactly why you're there, folks. Yeah. That is exactly why you're there, to get in the pool when it's terrible.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, going through the season, you're going to be able to experience some unique events. You know, now, obviously, this depends on where you live. You're down in southern Florida. Your chances of winter, your chances of winter are very slim. But there are ways to get cold, right? You just, you stay in 80 degree water for long enough, you will get cold.
Yeah, and that's why I say, like, some of these warmer places, right? Now the water doesn't get quite that cool, but some of these warmer places never get to actually experience like that. Hey, you know, I'd like to actually feel what it feels like to be in 61 degree water. Like, I've been in really fucking cold water before, and not just in the Navy, but like in Iowa, you know, kind of like I lived off of a river, and we'd like jump in the river in the ice, kind of silly shit. You know what I mean? Like, that's what we did as kids. So I'm just saying this because it's like, it's a real good opportunity for people to train over good duration, acclimate to all these things that they may not realize are important. But in the end, though, outside of the physical, I see that like a person's determination to go through good training for a year and, you know, adapt to all these things, these changes, potentially get injured once or twice and overcome it, right? Run into your real weakness and overcome it. You can only do that in a year and a half.
Yeah.
Not going to do it in 4 months.
You know, I really enjoy hearing people who came from a certain type of athletic history. Let's say, you know, a strength guy, and then, you know, did football and powerlifting and things like that. And then they enjoyed the journey of all this new stuff that they have never done before, you know, higher repetitions, calisthenics, running longer, swimming, rucking, you know, all of those events that are new to him, but he enjoyed them in a way because he saw a progression in his abilities as well. But once again, that takes time, and you got to go through the seasons to understand, you know, what we're talking about. I have a method I call seasonal tactical fitness periodization. It is literally that. Every season is a different focus on, you know, those strengths and weaknesses, depending on what you have. I recently, after chatting with Jeff a little bit about block periodization, recently changed a winter lift cycle to look like this, where we did 3 weeks of lifting, followed by a deload week that, instead of taking it off and doing nothing like we would, well, minimal, making changes like we used to do, we turned it into kind of a calisthenics cardio week. So our deload week was focused on calisthenics and cardio. Not high rep stuff, not high mileage stuff, just a little bit more than we were doing in the previous 3 weeks. And we just did that for 16 weeks. And it was a really fun way to do it that broke up the monotony of just lifting. You know, we really cherished that deload week of calisthenics because we were ready to kind of like, it'd be nice to not lift for a week, you know, because you're just really starting to feel, especially if you're getting heavier, you know, you just need an easier week sometimes. And we saw people PRing on runs. You know, we were doing short, fast runs, so they were getting faster. They were getting better at their push-ups and pull-ups. You know, I mean, it was just a really fun method that I had not done in ever, you know, over 20 years. I came up with this idea of block periodization and just understanding the process. And, you know, Jeff is a big fan of it. Because I was having really long strength cycles. If you do a whole winter, I mean, that's 12 to 16 weeks of a strength cycle, which, you know, there's some time in there where you just don't improve anymore. Right. And you have to take these little deload weeks or change it up to a point. And this system of 3-in-1 worked really well, turned a 12-week lift cycle into a 9-week lift cycle with 3 weeks of calisthenics cardio thrown in the middle. And that was effective. It was effective enough. And I could, I found I could do more types of people that way into the system versus having to pull the football player off altogether and do something else. I was able to mix them into the, to that system, change the rep scheme up a little bit, but that was it. You know, I didn't have to go sit him on a bicycle somewhere and just start pedaling. It actually worked for him as well.
Cause that's what we're, this timeline allows you guys to do is because we're trying to maximally stress you and then have the time for you to adapt and heal. Like that's, if the timeline is too short, your margin of error is too, it's great. It's bigger, right? Yeah. Cause the mistakes then are too hard to overcome in a short window because then you need time to allow for those mistakes to heal. We'll say mistakes, yeah. Your training mistakes, which now if you go through a training cycle without making mistakes, you didn't train hard enough, I think. And so I don't want people to say like, well, wait a minute, like, should I not have any of these issues? Like, yeah, like I would expect at least three or four things in a year to come up that you have to overcome, right? Not just get better, get faster. You know,
right.
You're going to find a lot of underlying issues because of the volume you need to get to the issue.
You know, plateaus and
Yeah. And again, and changing these cycles allows not just for the body to just break up the monotony, which is really probably the, I agree, it's probably from the psychological standpoint, it's the most important. But the other side, again, allows the body, what we're saying is the body can still train pretty hard, but if you change its stimulus, the input, it can heal and adapt the other ones.
Yeah. So you have a new week coming up, a new cycle coming up. Explain a little bit about what you're planning on doing with the groups that come to train with you.
Yeah. Yeah. We have our group. Our group is showing up on Sunday for our training starts Monday for 6 weeks. And that's, you know, ours is because I don't have them for that much of a duration. We kind of do it 2 week swings. Got jet flying over.
Yeah. Freedom.
So yeah, exactly. So what we do is kind of, in the time is our goal is that we treat it like more like a, not more like, but it's, I look at it like a classroom. It's like we have 2 week cycles that we rotate through. One are focused on movement, hypertrophy, healing tissue and whatnot. Cause at the end of that third week, we have our PT come in, right, from Canada. And then we work on strength. When then that varies, it's like, it's load, right? It's stabilizing the load and it's not necessarily heavy because a lot of it's time under tension, right? Yeah. Then the last piece is we need to get them sped up. But throughout it all, at least three times a week, what we do is we always end the day on skill acquisition. So we take aspects. I got about 96 exercises, like ballistic exercises with bands and other things that are advanced plyometrics within PST, like for example, what we do is I put like a wrap a band around this,
yeah,
right? And push-ups in it, you do accelerated, leave the ground, accelerated plyometric push-ups. So that's one of 96 that at the end of the day, each day, we basically program high velocity training under duress that can be done and it's managed. And we calculate and go, hey, you need to do 7 reps. You're doing 11. It's based on what their numbers are. So that way they're always high velocity under duress. And so after doing that for 6 weeks, we didn't really practice the PST, but we did every day. Yeah. And so by the end of it, then we lay out basically the final assessment is like, we sit them down last week and go, this is where you're at. This is where your number's at. This is what we see. And then we create a plan for them. And so that plan is specific to them where they're at in training. And then at that end of that plan, it's like, now you go see the mentor, or you go see the recruiter, you start that official process. And so ours is like, hey, we need to get you through here because you need to understand this stuff. Because when we send you out there to finalize that prep, you need to have the knowledge to do so. And so we do, it is their training on a daily basis, but I'm just because of the way that we're set up, I put the onus on them after 6 weeks. It's like, you have 6 weeks to pull all the information out of my brain for your benefit.
Yeah.
So they can film what they want. They can take what notes they want. They can ask any question they want relative to them between Catherine and I or our PTs and things like that. So when they leave here, they have absolutely no excuse on how to train for them best. Like it's them, it's theirs. And they had 6 weeks to have that determination.
That's good. Because so, I tell you where that's really healthy is because, you know, there's a lot of generic programs out there. I mean, my bookshelf is full of them. I write generic fitness programs, and you have to understand that you may have to personalize some of these generic programs for you and understanding what that means. I mean, you don't want to jump into a program if you've never run before and be running 20 miles in your first week, yep. Right? You don't want to do that, right? There may be advanced programs that start off at 20 miles a week, you know, just this, you know, and that's something that you have to be smarter about. And that's the type of education that Jeff provides over there. And we're trying to do for free here with the podcast and getting that information yep. out for you and letting you know that there are programs out there because change happens. You know, there is going to be a difference next year. Speaking of change, you know, in the process of the way the Navy recruits and prepares people going into SEAL, EOD, diver, SWCC, rescue swimmer, there's no longer going to be a mentor like there has been for the last 15 years, right? The SEAL mentor contract will end in December.
Good news.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. I don't know if it's being renewed, right, by somebody else, if it's out for bid. I don't think it's out for bid. So that means they go away. Now, what that means now is that there are some active duty SEALs, SWCC, divers that are in the recruiting world. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be active duty guys in all of the recruiting districts. So you may have to get PSTs taken to get your SO billet or SB billet by, you know, the active duty recruiters or maybe the scout team that they've done a pretty decent job at least training to do PSTs, though the consistency of those PSTs are different from, you know, every recruiting district, you know, from what I hear, from what I've seen. So it's going to be different. You're going to have to do a lot of this on your own, which is the way it's always been, right? So that's where things have not changed. Where people make it through this journey is they have done so much training on their own prior to joining the Navy that all the Navy has to do is PST you and get you qualified to go do your job of whatever that is, whether that's ASVAB scores and medical clearances and all of that. That's all the admin stuff. Everything else is up to you. I mean, boot camp is not going to prepare you for the next level of spec ops training. Boot camp will do just the opposite. I mean, you're going to get out of shape at boot camp. So just prepare for that. And then you go, you probably won't even take your first PST now until you're at Bud's Prep, which has also moved from Great Lakes over to Coronado. Yep. So there are so many changes coming on. It's not just the seasonal changes, but you're going to see some changes within the recruiting process. But there are some things that don't change, and that's your ability to train and the necessity for you to train, you know, and be well prepared long before you talk to a recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just don't have enough time.
Right, Stu.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Because at the end of the day, folks, the people that are going to prepare and train are going to be the ones that prepare and train. Right. Now I think that's what I look at big picture here. And I go, well, clearly after all that time, that mentorship program did not prepare and train the way that the Navy anticipated it. Probably. I'll say that.
I would say got PST scores higher.
Yeah. Potentially, you know, or you got more people taking PSTs, you know, like who knows at this point, you know, but I look at it and go, I think it's necessary to put the onus on the person. I really do.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think this is a better job of that.
Yeah. I'd be honest with you. I don't think the Navy or any military branch for that matter has a streamlined approach to prepare you for special ops training.
I'll say the non-PC way. I would bet my reputation that there's not a single person in the United States military that is capable of doing it properly. I will say that straight up. Well, I'll say that about the Navy. I'll say it about the Army, Air Force, and everyone. There's capability, that's my only, again, here's my point of frustration. It's like, we got rid of the mentor program, and now we just place people in there that still are incompetent, right? Or don't know enough. Like, it's like, why are we having people that don't know how to train people for the most difficult training in the world? Like, it's unthinkable to have somebody that's unqualified train the Yankees.
Well, you got to think about the mission of what they're doing. They're not trying to prepare you for buds. And that's what people have to realize. Their job is not to prepare you for buds. It's to test you to see if you meet this standard, and then you're off on your own. That's it. I mean, there's no preparatory process in, let's say, the training pipeline, so to speak, that prepares you for special ops in the regular military. Like, boot camp doesn't do it. And now, if you start going into the prep program and you start going into buds orientation, yeah, I mean, that is a progression that's going to start doing it, but it's only, you're only looking at like 2 months, right? That's all it's going to do. It's going to get you back into shape from being out of shape from boot camp. That's the goal of those 2 months. But there's nothing in the process of joining the military. Let's say you join the regular Army or regular Navy. There's not a pipeline
that gets
you to that. Now, there are jobs.
Yeah, there's not a physical preparation pipeline. There's not. Agreed.
Yeah. There are jobs that can progress you over the years. Like, if you're an Army guy, then you want to go through airborne training, and now you're in the 101st Airborne Division. Do that for a tour, and now you're like, hey, I want to go Rangers. Boop. You go up to another level. You go to Ranger training, right? Well, maybe I'll try Delta or SF. Another level. So, I mean, there are career progressions like that, but that, once again, each one of those depends on your preparation for all of them.
That'll be interesting. Again, it's like, you know, I get it. The military and law enforcement wants to take care of everything in house, as they should. They'd want to, right? But again, I go back to it and go, If physical preparation is the limiting factor, right? Because that's what it is. Because the Navy wouldn't have had this program running for 14 years if they didn't think they needed to prepare people, right? And so now it's unthinkable to not prepare people with a firearm, with a competent firearms instructor. I just don't understand why the Navy, at the very least, and I mean this with absolute respect to you, how is the Navy has never reached out to you and said, hey, Stu, we would really like to have you take a little oversight in this, and all in this reason, because you've done that for the Navy. You've done it for the Academy for years. You've supported it. Like, I can't wrap my head around why the Navy hasn't gone to the most successful coach in the history of our military training spec war and you. It blows my mind.
Well, I thank you for that compliment. That's very nice. I'm not necessarily looking to do those kind of jobs.
Understood. You know, But remember the last time I was there seeing you, you got a phone call with BORTAC.
Yeah.
Right. Remember seeing your car. Yeah. I was like, that's what I mean. It's like, you have been able to give direction to all these organizations, institutions with group training successfully. But you know, the one organization that hasn't asked you is the Navy. Like, it makes no sense to me.
Well, I appreciate that. That's not holding my breath for anybody.
Granted, I know you don't want to do that. I'm just saying, on principle, like, someone's like, hey, Stu, could we get you consult on this a little bit? Just like, take a look at this. It's like, we're building this infrastructure, but we're not quite sure if this might work in the Navy system. But you know it better than anyone. Like, in the sense of, like, you've seen it and you've worked through it with so many guys, and you have an institution like Naval Academy that respects and trusts you accordingly. Like, it doesn't make sense to me why anyone isn't asking you.
Well, you know, that's funny. You know, I will say this, you know, if you think about the three phases of tactical fitness, right? You have the first phase where you're trying to pass a fitness test to get into. That is your entrance exam. And then you have phase two, which is your boot camps, your selections. You got to prepare specifically for those. Where all the money goes in tactical fitness is phase three, which is the active duty operator, which I completely get, right? I mean, I don't think the military has a problem with recruiting people to want to be spec ops. You know, if they do, it's a wartime and they throw $50,000 bonuses, you know, at them and they pick up their numbers. Right. I don't think there is a need to spend or really make a whole lot of changes for phases one and two. Right. I mean, all the
right. You don't necessarily want to invest. You don't want to invest in somebody that hasn't made that commitment and showed that ability to endure. I get that. I totally get that. But I also look at it like if it were me, the Navy is never going to ask my advice. I'm certain of that. It would be this stuff that we're talking about. There needs to be basically an all stop between buds and SQT. And it's just a point of education. Like, hey guys, here's the history of injuries and load. Like, cause when you show up as a rookie in the NFL, you get all this, like, people have a problem with balancing your checkbook. People like, you know, all this stuff they got to learn to be adults, we'll say. True. The same thing. It's like, we need guys to go, hey, we put all this money invested in you as an operator. We expect you to potentially spend, you know, the average SEAL is probably spending eight years in the Navy, which is pretty long for your average enlistment, because most enlistments are only going to last 4 years, basically. We get in four and get out.
Yeah.
But most SEALs will stay in for at least an enlistment. So I look at it and go, wait a minute, like, we really need to create some longevity. So how are we going to create longevity? Well, it's the same way we would teach them to shoot. Need to create the foundation of understanding that gives them the knowledge base to go be snipers and all these things. That ability to become a sniper will never happen if NSW doesn't teach them so well. Like, NSW, in my opinion, probably does the best shooting instruction in the world. Like, am I biased? Of course. But I also know the competence of the command. So my point is I look at it and go, the capability is there. The benefit would be there. The only thing that's not there is like, well, we have all the shooting instructors. We have the skydive instructors. We have the guys in building demo. We have all the guys doing boats and motors. We have all that subject matter expert, senior enlisted officer corps. That's always there. But what the Navy does not have, the Army does not have, is a professional sitting there going, hey, let's assess the physical to enhance the skill. We got a lot of athletic trainers, but that's not their job, right? We have strength coaches, but only in very specialized units, and they don't get to them until the third phase.
Right.
Then we've already created so many habits that may be detrimental. And that's my only thought, is like, that is, you have to find a place where, yep, the commitment is there. They've made the sacrifice. That's buds. Now let's give them what does SQT give guys? It gives them a lot of high skill. Well, to handle that high skill, we need to also teach them how to sleep better, eat better, train better.
Oh, sure.
But what do I know?
No. I think the human performance mission is exactly that. You know, but you're right. I think sometimes people, and this is back in my day too, you know, people just went back to what they enjoyed doing. So some guys got into bodybuilding, some guys got into triathlons, some guys did those new adventure races that were popping up in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, some guys did powerlifting, right? And that's kind of what they did in their extracurricular training versus learning a little bit more about, you know, stress mitigation and training to be a well-rounded tactical athlete. I mean, the term tactical athlete didn't exist in my day. So, I mean, to be able to do all the things that you wanted to do or what your job requires of you sometimes requires you to do things that you don't necessarily enjoy. And I think learning that is a process that should occur in phases one and two of tactical fitness, because you're not going to get through the training unless you practice things that you naturally were bad at doing.
Yep.
But it's going to, that same philosophy has to move into phase three of tactical fitness when you're an active duty operator, because there's going to be imbalances in your training and there's going to be strengths and weaknesses that you have to deal with again, just like you did back in phase one. You know, and if there are like next levels, and let's say you're a phase three, but now you want to up it a notch and go to, you know, from the teams to, you know, a tier one unit, as a you're back in phase one again.
Yeah, man. Right. You really are. And that, you know, and that's why I keep saying is like learning these phases and that they're acceptable and you need to shift and go, like, cause it's like, you know, all the emergency procedures we learn on skydiving, right? They need to be there. They save lives and they're beneficial. And they'll always be built on. They're built off of that blood spilled. And that's what I look at, like training. I go, we want to mitigate as much of that as possible, as best we can. We want to make the most physically capable human being we can. And it's the time. Like I look at like, where can we really do this? Like, you're not going to do it in sport, really. I mean, you do kind of with pro sport, you guys got off season, stuff like that, where it's their job, but you don't really have, there's never really an opportunity where it's like, listen, you're a big part of what we need out of you is to continue to perform at a really high level, you know, with stress beyond what is acceptable in sport. Like, that's the thing, is this sport thing that's going to teach us some of the schematics of it, of like how to approach this. But that's where the SQT thing is, in using the buzz instructors and having the intermesh of the professionals. Cause you remember getting SQT, how like you were invigorated, you'd gotten your health back kind of post-buds,
yeah.
And
yeah.
you were an avid learner. You're like, okay, we're done with the nonsense. Like, we're going to get to real tactics. We're actually going to be driving the boats instead of being shepherded around. Like, all these things that you're like, hey man, now you got to be a SEAL. And then pretty soon you're going to be a chief and you're going to be a lieutenant commander and you need to be in charge of your platoon and not just oversee training as shooting, skydiving, and demo and land warfare, because none of that's useful if you're not healthy. And there's so and that's the crazy thing, is because there's no real healthy SEALs. Everyone's always in a state of just like trying to repair themselves, you know? But that's the job, you know? And we understand that. We know the buzz instructors, we know the command staff understands that. It's like, you know, and it's a money issue or a time issue. And I get it, all that. But like, I think I'm not complaining because I'm mad at it. I'm just like, I think it could be better. I really can. I think those guys deserve it. Post SQT, man, give them what they can take.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got to learn how to do it for long term, you know, longevity. Yeah. And then, you know, believe it or not, there's a fourth phase. It's that phase I'm in, right? It's the after you've done your service and, you know, you're licking your wounds from, you know, your job, you're licking your wounds from previous athletics. You know, once you turn 40, I don't know why it is, but, you know, that shoulder injury that you had in high school reappears, right? And, you know, your lower back injury from, you know, when you were 25, rucking and fireman carrying people, you know, reappears, yep. Right? And you got to deal with those things. And it's a journey, is what I'm really saying.
Stu, how do you deal with that? You deal with that by quality training, right?
Yeah.
A good process, you know, assessing that again. And that's we teach guys the malfunction procedures of skydiving. We teach them that. We teach them the malfunction procedures of pistol, rifle. It's like, what are the malfunction procedures for your body?
Yeah.
You know, shin splints, sore shoulder, my neck is hurting, lower back pain, my ankles are killing me, I got plantar fasciitis. Well, how do I fix that?
Yeah.
Crickets, right? Because most guys are going to go, well, I can't go see the trainer because then I'm going to be called a pussy or whatever. That's going to think less of. So instead, I'm going to go try to find my own way. But I when you're a candid student, I think that's the time to learn, especially after SQT.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, we talked about change today and various, in fact, we changed topics so many times. I've kind of lost, lost the whole thing, but at least we were talking about change to begin with. Change is coming with the seasons. Get ready for the cold. One thing I like about the transitions from, you know, if you're still running a little bit outside and it's starting to get cold, one of the big things that I have found that was really helpful last year, because we ran throughout the winter outside, or lifting outside too, is that, you know, whenever you go for a run and you've been running inside for a while, then you go outside and now it's like 35 degrees for your first time running in a while, and you get that really cold inhalation that is no fun, hurts your nose, hurts your throat, lips are chapped, all those things. But when you progress through it, and you go from 60 degree runs to 50 degree runs to 40 degree runs to 30 degree runs, the transition is there, right? You slowly transition into colder air, and it's really easy to handle that versus going from 65 to 35, you know, on a beat of a dime. So that's something that, you know, stay consistent through the seasons. Next thing you know, it just gets a lot easier. And one thing I discovered after last winter's cycle by doing that was we got hard. I mean, I was probably harder than I've ever been with the ability to handle cold. Like, it was not even a big deal anymore. You know, there are guys running in t-shirts and, you know, 35 degree air, you know, which would normally I would be bundled up and breaking a sweat, bundling up. So it's your body gets used to that, and it can create, you know, it can burn some extra calories to keep you warm, but it doesn't do that unless it's exposed to it. So,
yep. Train year round, folks.
Yeah.
That's, you can experience those things, and then you don't have to try to be acclimating to cold weather. Right. Yeah. About the only thing I change typically in the winter, like that's like really worth mentioning is in especially the northern states where you do get a lot of snow and ice. If you get a lot of snow in places, like you get near live like in New York and the Adirondacks, you should get yourself a pair of snowshoes, truly, or learn to cross country ski. If you live in really cold weather, like Minnesota, Iowa, North Dakota, South, whatever place like that, what I typically do is get a nice, good pair of hiking shoes, and you can buy even like the really, really streamlined little spikes that go over your shoe on the bottom.
Yep.
Ruck. I switch over to rucking.
Oh yeah. Same.
When things get slippery and snowy, it becomes a load bearing thing. And because you do have to bundle up, you're going to be working harder. You're going to be carrying weight. Like, in of itself, it creates a really good training structure aerobically and anaerobically. And then you get acclimated to cold weather. So I really, really prefer, really like, if the roads are clear, definitely get some runs in those cold air. But when snow and ice come down, think snowshoe and rucking. Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Buy yourself some yak tracks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember those? Yeah. Just put those right over your shoes.
Exactly. Yeah. And the gaiters. Get some gaiters. Right. Or get an old sweatshirt. Get an old sweatshirt. Cut it off. Okay. Leave the wrist thing on of the sweatshirt. Slide that over your foot off your leg opposite.
Huh.
Right. And then that sleeve or that will be backwards with the cuff here. And then it goes over your shoe, and you can just tie a piece of string around it. And now you've got a spat. So we used to do that, like kind of makeshift in Afghanistan. Be like, shit, I didn't bring my stuff. Just cut your sleeve off real quick and slide it over your leg. And now you've got a gaiter.
Oh yeah.
So it's the kind of things you can do to like kind of just, and I think that the winter is the time to really adapt and overcome like those sort of things and see new challenges that you wouldn't have in the summer, you know?
Yeah, so that's a really good point.
I'm a big believer in training cold.
No, I love that because, you know, what do most people do in the winter? They quit sit training. They quit training. They watch football. They watch football 6 days or 5 days a week, or however comes on, and they just eat and drink. And it's just like, you wonder why you gained 20 pounds over the winter. So, yeah. Stay moving.
Hope you guys can kind of pick through this episode and kind of figure out what we're talking about. Yeah, it's good though. It's good though. It's necessary because it's winter's coming and there's a lot going on, a lot of change. So yeah.
Yeah, a lot of change coming on, and you know, changing the community as well as changing the seasons, and you just got to be adaptable.
Yep.
And move on. So, all right, hey Jeff, thanks again. I appreciate it. You guys, you guys can always go to performancefirstus.com, check out Jeff's stuff that he has over there. A lot of great training over there. StuSmithFitness.com. Come over as well. Balance the two somehow. Yep. Find one you like. Go with it. Right.
Everyone send an email and a text message to the Department of Navy and tell them to give Stu a call.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
It's like, no, I don't. Because quite frankly, it's like, I don't want to work for
them. You know, it's like, you know, phase three guys, they spend all their money on phase three guys. That's where the money belongs. But yeah, I appreciate that. You're being too kind with your flattery over there. So. All right.
Well, it's warranted, but that's all right, though. It's okay. Humility is good, too. All right.
We'll see you later.
Appreciate it, Stu.
All right. Take care. We'll see you.